Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Good. Hey, what episode are we on?
We are on 39 today.
Yeah, I got confused the other day for some reason. I thought we were one behind.
So no, we're on 38. You got it right on the last one.
Nice. Nice. Yay. Well, you know, I can only keep shit straight a week at a time.
Right? Anything past a week is like, in my mind, 3 months out.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. So welcome to, what, almost 3 months of quarantine?
Yeah, 3 months. It started in March.
Yeah, so we're almost
right
there.
Right after spring break, yeah. Can we be done already?
I know. How are you feeling about it?
I'm still good. I mean, mind you, I'm canning mangoes, if that tells you anything.
Right. Well, first of all, where the fuck did you get mangoes from?
The store. Okay, so let me explain to you why. Okay. You got this really confused look on your face.
I saw the jar and I was like, that better be fucking moonshine.
No, it's not.
All right, tell us what you're doing over there, farmer.
All right, so since I'm still waiting for my crops to come in, right, I learned this one thing. Because there's certain things that I can't grow, right? Like mangoes I can't grow. Mm-hmm. It'd take me 10 years to get any fruit from a tree. So, but I learned online that what you can do is while certain fruits or produce are on sale, because mm-hmm. they're in their prime season, to stock up on them, can them, and then you can have them in their off season.
Okay.
So mangoes, I went to Aldi, were 49 cents. A mango. So I bought 10 mangoes, cut them up, canned them, and then put them in the hot bath. And then, so December, if I want to pop a mango and make mango salsa or pop some in some moonshine, I have the mangoes already prepared.
What liquid was in it?
So it's the juices, and then I had to put a little bit of lemon juice in it to preserve it.
And how did you pick mangoes?
Because they were on sale.
You're a fan of mangoes too?
Oh, yeah, I love mangoes.
Oh, okay.
They're delicious. Mm-hmm. So well, I can make a mango moonshine out of it. I can do a mango salsa. You can put it on in a fruit salad with some whipped cream. There's lots of uses for mangoes.
Yeah, it's mangoes are a big fruit in the Philippines, and you know they're they grow in the Philippines. A couple of my sisters are huge mango fans. I'm not. I don't like the sliminess of them.
Okay.
Now in Thailand, they eat a dessert that's like a white sticky sweet rice.
Yeah, like rice pudding?
Well, it's not rice pudding, but it's basically just rice and sugar. And then they take a mango and then they slice it up and then you eat it with rice. It's just I've never been – I like dried mangoes, but I don't like the texture of it, I think.
And that's
fair. Or just the sliminess of it.
Now, what's weird is I like mangoes despite the sliminess, but I don't like pears because of their – too softness.
Oh, see, I like pears.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I don't like pears because I feel like I'm biting into an apple and then it's mush and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, and the best time to eat a pear is when it's cold and really soft because that's when you know it's ripe. So that's interesting, the difference between the two.
Yes, it's funny how texture makes a difference.
Yeah, any fruits you don't like?
Pears. I mean, I like pears if they're already processed and cleaned and they're
I love them in a salad, yeah.
Right. Any fruit I don't like? No. I mean, I'm trying to think. There's pretty much nothing, no fruit I don't like.
Yeah.
This is some crazy thing I haven't tried, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any fruit out there that's like super fucking weird that people don't like. If you think about just the basic fruits.
Yeah, all I can think of, and just because I want to say it on air, is a kumquat.
What is a kumquat?
It is a fruit.
I'm Googling it. Tell me what you think it is.
I think it's a fruit, but it's kind of like a little berry fruit. It's small, but it's clear on the inside. I don't know, kind of like a grape.
Oh, yeah.
See how.
Yep.
It's, was I right?
Yeah, an orange-like fruit that is native to Southeast Asia. So it's more of a citrus fruit, but tiny.
Right.
Huh. Just like the little Asian people. Small.
Small. There you go.
Tiny.
It
that's funny.
Good things come in small packages, right?
Nice. That's right. Yeah, they do. Fun size packages.
Yes. So what are you doing besides going crazy?
Well, not so much going crazy, but I feel like things are starting to become more normal in some ways where, like, people asking, like, hey, what do you guys have going on this day or this day? Where before it was nothing. What do you mean?
Right.
Fuck you. Why are you asking me that? You know what we're all doing. Nothing. Somehow quarantine is now feeling busy, mm-hmm. and I don't like it.
You don't like it.
Well, no, because it means it means we're moving forward too, right? And that things are going to start going back to normal where I'm like, okay, wait, but staying at home wasn't so bad. And being in your pajamas all day wasn't so bad.
Right.
And I can feel the transition of returning back to I have this event, that event, whatever it might be. Even if it's somehow not even with people, it's just starting to feel busy. And I don't think I like it.
Oh, so you're still very comfortable in the working in your jammies?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I could do that all day long. I think, you know, when I talk about, I don't like what I think I'm perceiving is what people call the new normal of I went to the grocery store and I don't like the arrows and I don't like the spacing and I don't like the mask and I don't want to be comfortable with it because I don't want it to go on any further. Like once this is done, I don't want to see Americans walking around with masks.
No, and I don't either. And the phrase, this new normal bullshit has got to stop.
Right.
Because things are going to go back to normal.
Right.
It's not going to be a new normal. This is crazy. I wore a mask for the first time throughout this entire thing because I had to go to my thyroid appointment. And I asked them, you know, do you require me to wear a mask? And they said no, but I was like, all right, but people are, you know, it's a doctor's office.
Right. There might be sick people there. I would do the same thing, yeah.
Right. And they were very understanding because I refused to get my blood work done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm not letting anybody stick me with a needle right now. You guys are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they understood. So I went in there. I wore the mask for maybe 30, 45 minutes tops.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I got back into my car, I almost damn near passed out from the lack of oxygen coming through the mask. And there was a chemical smell coming through the mask.
Ew, weird.
Yeah, and it was one of those ones that come in a box.
Uh-huh.
And it's a medical grade and everything. And I had a bad headache from inhaling that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine people that are wearing that all day long.
Yeah. Well,
the damage is doing. I mean, because when I took it off, Sabrina, I swear to God, I gasped for air because I was like, oh, I can breathe.
Right, right. We brought Lorelai. She went to her first store. Inside her first store since March, I don't know, the first week of March, second week of March. And we kind of debated beforehand. We had a grocery list in a very small amount of time. And so it was like, all right, do I sit in the car with Lorelai and let Nate go in there? And then it take longer because now you have to zigzag your fucking way through the grocery store through all these aisles and which way you have to walk. Or do we tag team it and put her in a mask or do we not even put her in a mask? Nate and I don't wear masks out. And I didn't want to text my sister. I know her point of view. I didn't want to text. I have friends that are either super, super crazy about it or super, super
lax
against it. And, you know, each side is calling everybody stupid. And then I have one friend that is like right in the middle. She is, a doctor of pharmacy. She's smart. She's married to somebody on that far left that thinks it's fucking stupid. So I asked her, I respect her decision, and just said, hey, I'm taking her in. One, should I take her in? Two, should she wear a mask? She said, take her in. But yeah, she should wear a mask just in case somebody coughs on her. You don't know. So we put a mask on her, and it was sad watching Nate tie this mask around her face. And then just explaining to her, like, this is what we need you to do. I want you to, you can push the cart today. Hold on to the cart. Don't touch anything. And just know that it's okay. And if it's uncomfortable for you, just tell me and we'll leave. Right. Because it gets like, she was like, it's hot under here. And it's hard to breathe under here. And I was like, well, that's most important. If you feel like you're having problems breathing, take your hand off the cart and signal for help before you pass the fuck out. It was just sad. I don't want our kids to have to go through that.
No.
And it, because it makes you feel like you can't trust society. Like you can't trust your neighbors and whatever it is because of this illness.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And so then I saw an article that our county is voting on or taking surveys for the next school year. Do people want to go back in August? Do they want to continue learn at home in August? Do they want to come back and the kids require wearing masks and cleaning stations and this and that? And if that's the option, I don't want my daughter to go back to that.
No, because
I want her to go back to how it was before.
Right. As it should.
I hate this fear. It is like a fear of people.
Right. And I hate it. Like, and whether it's intentional or not, but this virus is turning us against each other.
It is. Well, it breeds fear. And it's the worst thing is, you know, normally our fears before have been, you know, we're great at dividing classes. We're scared of, you know, the rich are scared of the poor. They're going to rob us. Are these homeless going to attack us? We're scared of color people. We're scared of hate crimes. You know, African-Americans are scared that they're going to be killed. But now it's like you're scared of everyone because the safest person can be the sickest person.
Exactly.
And it's, I just hate it. And I don't want to live in that world. And so there's a part where as the state is loosening it up, I don't want to be a part of that world. And that's what keeps me inside my house where I'm like, y'all let me know when we're opening shit up for real.
Right, not this half-assed kind of
ordeal. Yeah, I'm not doing that. It's weird.
So Dion and I went out to dinner 2 days after the state opened up at 25% capacity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we went out to a restaurant and we sat outside at the bar for a little bit and then we moved inside. But you know, nobody was wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was normal. Everything was fine.
Good.
It felt great. We got better service than we had gotten in forever. And it felt normal, which was nice. So,
right.
You know, I have that experience, and then sometimes, you know, I go to Walmart, and it's about 50-50. People wearing them, people not wearing them. And then you listen to the news, and the news has got it all scared and freaked out. But then I go outside my house, and I'm like, well, I don't see where what they're saying is going on here, so it's kind of hard to figure out which way to go.
How large of a city have you been? Have you traveled outside of DeLand to Orlando or Jacksonville? Because I would disagree with you in saying that Jacksonville, there are definitely masks everywhere.
So when I went to Orlando for that dinner where no one was wearing a mask, that was in Orlando.
Oh, okay.
Nobody.
Interesting.
Yeah. So... Mm-hmm. And it was a popular place, and it was as busy as they were allowed to be, and like I said, no masks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our city or our state now is, what, 50% for restaurants. I honestly think all of 2020 is done. Concerts that we had planned for the fall, they've all been canceled and rescheduled for next year already. I think almost every major event for 2020, they're just going to cancel. It's basically like the year
that
did not occur.
I agree. And I said to my mom, I said, well, if that's the case, then I am still 36 and we're not counting my birthday.
Well, I think, you know, there's a good part of it too, where you think about, all right, well, then what did you accomplish in 2020? Well, what you should have accomplished is maybe we all saved some money, right? If you did not lose your job,
right,
because every single fucking thing is canceled,
you might have saved some money.
Yes, everybody should be a little financially better going into 2021.
Right.
And also come to an understanding of what an emergency and emergency funds should look like financially for all of us, right? Because what if all of a sudden you're deemed non-essential and you do lose your job?
Correct. Dave Ramsey would say this is a perfect learning opportunity.
Right. It is, because, you know, most major events, we have insurance of some form, whether it's our medical insurance, homeowner, whatever it might be to save us, auto insurance. There was nothing to save us here. Besides a $1,200 bailout or whatever you got, Trump bucks.
Right.
So,
and that's not, you know, that's not enough to keep. Look, the biggest.
No.
So I don't. What's going to happen is when things go back to normal, say 2021. You know, just throwing a date out there. But what's going to happen is everybody that's deferred all their payments, with all the interest coming back, are going to have to repay all that money back. And
right,
that's going to be a big hit.
Right, right. Well, speaking of ways to blow money, did you see that we bought a boat?
Yes, I did. Are you excited? Do you love it?
I am. I am. I'm super. This is what I'm really excited about. And speaking of Dave Ramsey, is that, you know, obviously we live in Florida and we are a salt life kind of family. We all love to fish and do all these things. And it doesn't make sense that I didn't own a boat before this. However, making the financial decisions, and we do both, you know, you and I have experience with Dave Ramsey. I know my sister's used it. Some friends have used it. And learn how to pay off certain debt and work for certain goals. And a boat and a dock, and, you know, we live on the water, but we needed a dock first. And so you can't have the horse without the cart, or the cart without the horse, or whatever the fucking saying is. And so in my case, I had to spend $20,000 on a dock first before I could have a place to put a boat. And it just made sense for us to make these financial moves to get us to this point where we were ready to do it. And it felt more than just going like, oh, we got a boat. For Nate and I, when we finally wrote the check for the boat and the dock, because we had to do both at the same time, is we did it.
Right. You felt great. Like, you accomplished,
right?
This,
yeah,
great goal.
Like, right. And we made sure to express that to our kids. Like, hey, we did this. We explained the financial steps that we were taking this entire way and the movements that we were making to them, so that they would understand that, like, you know, unlike how it could read on Facebook or to the out, like, oh, I guess the Braganzas just got it like that. I want my kids to understand, no, we're making smart decisions and movements that made sense for us. And this is how you accomplish things in
exactly
life. And that part felt really good. Like that high five between Nate and I of, hey, that was a big fucking goal and we did it. And we have a boat.
Right. Now you have something fun to play with. It's not just, you know, it feels really great because you saved for it. You got yourself into a financial position where you could save for it. And now,
right,
because, you know, you guys have gotten yourself out of debt.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. And I really wish more people would see the excitement, the delayed gratification in saving up for something and not going into debt for it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people need to, I can remember when we bought our house, my husband was in need of a new car. And if anybody's ever bought a house, you know, you can't put anything on your credit while you're in that process, right? No big. And so then he had to arrive, and we knew we were going to buy a house within 6 months. And it was like, well, you can't have a new car for 6 months until you need to make it work.
Right.
And so then when we bought our house, and then immediately 30 days later, he bought a car. I saw a text, and I'm not going to say who it was from, But I saw a text on somebody's phone where they had screenshotted my husband's new car post and sent it to somebody else that I know. And there it was right there on their phone and said, must be fucking nice. And the answer is, it is fucking nice. It's fucking nice to work for things.
Yep.
And when people look at you and they're like, oh, it must. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And just stop being a fucking hater. Pat them on the back and say, hey, good job.
Right. At least do that. Or buck up and realize you're not doing the things you need to do to get the things that you want. And you need to make your own personal changes. Stop fucking hating on your success.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so there's, because of that, that's always stuck with me where I'm like, okay, you know, be careful about how your excitement comes off. But then also, fuck you. Right. Like, we're working really hard to do it. So I'm excited to have a boat. We put it in the water last week. Jamie was in town. I don't know if you saw that. My best. So, you know, when we started this podcast was before Jamie or after Jamie had come in town. But my best friend comes into town almost every other weekend during the summer. There's cheap flights from Ohio to Jacksonville. She has her son, doesn't have her son every other weekend. Zero fucking friends up in Ohio. So she comes down here to have a good time. Don't blame her.
Right.
Florida's awesome, right? Why not come to where everybody wants to come? So she came into town, and as we're leaving the airport, Jen and I picked her up. We noticed our favorite bar was open. Ooh. Even though bars aren't open in Jacksonville yet or in the state of Florida, because our bar sells liquor, It's actually deemed a liquor store. So it's allowed to open. And so they moved all the tables outside into the parking lot. So then we're like, oh, and Jamie said, like, hey, Ugly Ed is doing karaoke out there tonight. We were like, well, fuck, maybe we should come up here tonight. Because I had, like, the kids were going to the beach, and we knew that we were going to have a crazy night at my house Friday night, no matter what. Like, the girls were going to drink. Nate was coming over. The guy that Jen's been dating is coming over. She's been in quarantine with him. And his one friend, the one friend that I accidentally went on my double date with.
Okay.
So because I asked him to stay into town because my friend was coming into town who was single. So I was like, hey, stay, come to my house Friday night and meet my single friend. You know, maybe you guys can make out together and heavy pet one another.
And you already know he's got a good sized dick. So everything's great.
Yeah. Well, that's what she was like. What does he look like? I was like, girl, you already seen it. Because I sent you his identical twin dick pic already. And she was like, oh.
She was like, oh, okay.
So this is, once we got home, we were like, yeah, maybe we'll go up to 747. And then you could see all three of us kind of like think about it and go, it's probably not the best idea.
But let's do it.
Like, we didn't.
Really?
So, you know, it's just not the best idea. Just because they found a loophole in their rule and their law. There's a reason behind the rules that they're making, and they're letting us do it, and I'm going to follow those. And you found a loophole, but I'm going to keep my happy ass at home. I have a karaoke machine. They brought bottles of liquor for them. They were taking shots, and I have a badass sound system in the back of my yard. And we sang and danced and played karaoke, and the girls passed out drunk. It was basically a night at 747.
Without all the smoke, so it's even better.
And without putting anybody in danger or whatever it might be. So it was a good weekend, but also a weekend of let's feel normal, but also still make the right decisions rather than just go balls to the fucking wall now and find out what happens when, you know, it might be too late. I mean, God forbid they're right. And so, you know, all of a sudden we all end up sick after we've been sitting at home for 90 fucking days.
Yes, that'd be bad. Because then you're really going to be staying home.
Yeah, yeah. So we did have a fun night. I will tell you, though, for the first time. So you guys know that I gave up drinking. It's been 18 months. Uh-huh. I don't know. And I've always stood by the fact that I like hanging. Like, I like being in bars. I like watching people have a good time. I like all of this. And I have to be very careful how I state this because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I'm not sure I like watching people drink when I know the reason why they're drinking. Mm-hmm. So drinking for fun and having a great time, I don't have a problem with. But when I'm watching people drink and I know that it's because they're trying to feel happy rather than just try to have a mm-hmm. good time, it makes me sad. And I hated the way I felt just watching it. And even watching it on TV now, or what, you know, when you're watching reality TV and it's kind of fun to watch people get drunk and get this messiness, but something's changing in me where it's like, it's so uncomfortable.
So is it,
because I know what they're doing.
Right. So is it uncomfortable because it reminds you of when you drank because you were covering feelings?
Yeah, of course. And it's like, I know how they're going to feel in the morning, right? It doesn't, you wake up exactly who you were the morning before. All the things that were making you sad the day before, they didn't go away.
Because it didn't solve the problem. You know,
right. And I just didn't, I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. And I kept trying to remind, like, don't be stuck up all of a sudden, right? Little Miss, oh, I don't drink. It's just, I don't know. Do you understand what I'm
totally
saying?
I totally understand what you're saying. And I'm going to mention, so you know that I'm listening to Black Privilege by Charlemagne the God, right?
And, yes, my man Charla.
And I'm on chapter 9 or 10, and he literally just talked about drinking and your friends and surrounding yourself with the right type of people, right? He's like, if you were in your late 30s, your 40s and 50s, you should not be at the club. Clubs are for when you're in your 20s and you're young. He's like, if you're not in that age group, you're that fucking creepy guy at the club that other people were making fun of you for. So he's right. Like, get your ass out of the club and focus your attention somewhere else. I wonder if that has something to do with your change, because we do have a birthday coming up pretty soon, Sabrina.
We do, yeah. I've got less than 30 days for my 40th birthday. And you know, I've always done this. Sometime around December, I always round up to the next year. My birthday's in June. Mm-hmm. So I've already started referring to myself as 40. And it made me think about the other day when I listened to our podcast and it was your sister's birthday and you wouldn't say her age and you wouldn't say your age, but you actually just said your age. And I wrote it down and circled it, by the way.
What number did you write down?
36.
Good. That's the wrong number.
Motherfucker.
You weren't listening correctly.
No. So I'm going to have to add a year. All right. Plus one.
Well, all right, 2020, it's minus one.
What the fuck? Minus one. Now I got a plus mine. I'm going to be all confused by the time I read my notes. So I've already started to refer to myself as 40 years old. And in my opinion, I look fucking great. I don't care how old I am. I also am excited to say goodbye to my 30s.
Okay.
You and I have talked about our 20s and what assholes, you know, we think that people are. I will say I was an asshole. You feel like you know so fucking much. You get this power of being an adult and you truly don't know shit. My 30s, the last 10 years is probably the best 10 years of my life. There was so much growth. There was so much loss. There was so much sadness. There were so many celebrations. I'm going into 40 knowing that. Also, and this sounds weird, like, I feel like this is the second half of my life. I have maybe another 40 years to fucking get this right. Yeah. And I'm not going to waste it anymore on bullshit and on not having conversations with people, on not saying the way I feel, with hurting people's feelings, because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the girl that I was when I was 20. I don't even want to be the woman that I was when in my 30s. I want to be Sabrina, who I am in this moment today, and be okay with that. And I'm super fucking excited about turning 40 years
old.
You
should be. And that's amazing. And it's so true. We are not the same people that we were when we were 20 and when we were 30. Hell, we're not even the same people we were 5 years ago.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And
And
I think 30s are the years to really learn your lessons about life, right? It humbles you. And then you also learn where your true friendships are, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's when your friendship circle starts to dwindle down, but the quality increases.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that too, right? Because in my 30s, I will say, what a great comparison. You said filter. If you think about it as a filtering system, right? In your 20s, you fill your life with all this stuff, these careers, these jobs, these people, these things. You fill it through. And then your 30s, if I think about it like a colander, you're just pouring all that stuff through it. And then what's left in that picture below
is something amazing.
Yeah. How fucking cool that. I just got the goosebumps. Thank you,
You're
Tabby.
You're welcome. I just came up with
that. I love that. Yeah, I love that. What a beautiful way to think about that. And I'm super fucking stoked about turning 40. I'm having a cake smash. I've got a tutu.
Oh my gosh. So
I'm having a cake smash
because I really want to be there.
Well, so, no, I'm not. My friend Caroline is going to come and take the pictures. My sister is coming in town, and because my sister and Ethan share the same birthday, which is a few days before mine. So my little sister is coming into town. She's turning 39, and I'm making her do a cake smash since we're Irish twins.
Nice.
And I'm making Ethan do a cake smash, and we've got We have tutus, and I've got an outfit for Ethan with a bow tie, and my beautiful cake lady, Jennifer Harris, is making us some smash cakes, and then Caroline is going to come and photograph it for us, It's going to be ridiculous, but fun, and I don't know, I'm just fucking excited. It's not over the hill or anything like that. I'm just stoked to be 40 years old.
Well, that's awesome. So I guess... were these your original plans before the quarantine, or?
So, I've gone back and forth on this. I don't really feel like I'm having a quarantine birthday because it wasn't right in the middle of it. You know, like a March, April, those poor people that could not leave your house, right? Without, God forbid, getting arrested like those fuckers in Maryland, right?
Oh, and apparently in Florida as well, because I looked it up, and it would be a second-degree misdemeanor, go to jail, and a $500 fine.
Nice. So, yeah, I don't feel like I'm one of those people. What I do feel like is we don't know what the temperature is going or what the world's going to look like in a week, let alone 30 days. So planning something 30 days from now is impossible. You and I are – you know, I message you guys about our friend's birthday next weekend. And the message is, hey, we're going to be here. But besides that, we have no fucking clue
what's going to happen.
Yeah, because you walk into a restaurant and then some of them are just closing their doors and saying, all right, we tried it. It's not working. So you don't know what's going to happen. Yep. This is where I've struggled with my 40th birthday from the beginning. Is that at first I thought I wanted a big party. I thought I wanted a big trip. Like, you know, you went on my husband's 40th birthday trip. We went to New Orleans. It was an amazing time. I thought I wanted to go to Ireland, and I was on board for it. The problem is a trip to Ireland is a lot of drinking, and I would have loved to do that 18 months ago, but I can't do it now. So do I really want to ask all my friends or whomever to go to Ireland with me and then watch everybody else drink? Not really. Do I want to go? And so that's where I've struggled of, well, what kind of celebration do I want? I don't want to pay and sit and just watch people drink anymore. It's just not. And so then I thought I'll have a bowling alley party because I went to the bowling alley like a few, but you just gave me a weird look. That's the same look my sister gave me. So I went to the bowling alley, and I love bowling, and I love the shitty food in a shitty bowling alley. And we have such a shithole bowling alley on the north side of town. I was like, I bet I could rent this whole fucking bowling alley for $2,000 and just invite everybody to my redneck bowling party.
There you go, Sabrina.
So then I text my sister, and I was like, I think I'm going to have a bowling party. And she called me, and she was like, listen here, you little fucker. I'm flying into town to surprise you, and I'm not flying in to go bowling. So you better step it up a little bit.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. So I'm renting a house in Clearwater Beach, and all I want to do is sit by the pool. And now I get to use my boat. My friend Randy, you know, my little brother from another mother, was going to bring his boat. And basically what we do when Randy comes is just fish and lay by the pool and lay by the beach. And that's what we're doing for my birthday weekend. It's, you know, just nothing, basically, right. But in another house. What we're doing right now, but on a house on the West Coast.
There you go. That sounds awesome.
And then the plan is, as long as we got to check with the Airbnb people, but then again, to send the same message that I did to you and to Doreen and to our other friends and say, this is where we're going to be. If the guy okays other visitors there, then come and join us for dinner by the pool.
Right.
Saturday night, if you guys, you know, want to stretch your legs and go for a drive. But if not, feel no pressure, because I want zero pressure. I don't want to have to worry about the menu for the weekend, who's cooking what, who's bringing this food, all that stuff. You know, you plan a 4th of July party, all that stuff. I just don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I have struggled a little bit with hurting people's feelings of, well, you know, this is kind of a tradition in our friend group. And what are people going to think that, well, Sabrina doesn't want us to come?
Right.
So let me ask you, as my friend, like, is that...
So, like, Sabrina, you know me. If you honestly, even if you said to me straight up, I don't want you to come because of this virus and you don't know where I've been and all of that, I would be sad, right? Because mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to get to celebrate with you. But I wouldn't be mad at you. Like, I would understand.
Right.
I wouldn't be like, that bitch is, you know, ignoring me and all that. No, I wouldn't be like that. I would just be like, oh, okay, I understand. Fuck. And I give you sad eyes. And I probably make you feel a little bad, but.
Right.
But other than that, I understand. Because I also think part of going into your 40s is the simplicity.
Yeah, it feels beautiful.
Doesn't it? So when my birthday came up, and even though it was in April, Dion's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't want to do anything. I'm like, I don't want a big party, because we were going to have all of Colton was going to come over, going to do a joint birthday. His friends were coming over. We were going to make like 17 different foods from 17 different ethnic background.
Yeah.
And I was so excited about all that food, and then I was just like, no, we're good now. It's too much.
I love that feeling. Yeah. When you release yourself of the pressure and expectation and to just be okay in
it. Yeah. So like, and I'm having a dilemma right now because we do have a 4th of July party. We've done it every single year for the past 3 years. And I'm having a hard time deciding if I want to do it, right?
It's so much.
It's so much. Money's really tight right now. And then trying to figure out everybody's schedule. I mean, I've thought about maybe just dwindling it down to Jacksonville crew. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that. But I don't know yet. But I know I can't handle 25, 30 people coming over for the weekend.
And also that maybe you just don't want to handle all that anymore, right? Especially as the host, like, you don't get to relax. You and Dion, and there's just no relaxing in that moment and enjoyment.
Right.
Where, you know, there's times where I come down to your farm and it's just you, me and my husband, and you and your husband. And it's a true quality time compared to the entire crew
plus
coming
kids.
Down. Yeah, plus kids. And then you have, and plus dogs. And then it's like segmented conversations rather than just one-on-one time, which I know can make people, when you have a group of friends, feel jealous of like, oh, well, why are they hanging out or why didn't I get an invite? But it really is just this like the biggest moments when you and Dion and Nate and I have gotten closer together are these days that we decide to just spend with just the two of us, right? Yeah, so it makes sense. I thought about your 4th of July thing the other day, and I was looking at my calendar, and I was like, I'm not even going to ask her. Yeah. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, cool. We're good. We'll all get together again.
I'll let you guys know soon. I'm still waiting to see how some things pan out, you know, but I'm kind of already thinking it may not happen. But I'm not making that official yet, right?
All right, we'll pencil Clearwater July 4th weekend just a maybe in your, June 14th weekend. No, Flag Day is my birthday along with Donald Trump. We'll let you know as soon as the Airbnb
and
guy.
If need be, we'll find a hotel or figure something out.
Right, yeah. So, hey, you mentioned your period. I wanted to mention this, so... All these moms and women and everybody stuck at home, you know, dealing with your hormones, and we don't have a place to get away, right? So I'm sitting, my son made his lunch. He sat down at the kitchen table. I sat down at the kitchen table. I'm about to eat my lunch, but I was eating one of those big fancy bowls of ramen, you know, that Japanese thing, where before I thought those things looked like a pile of random shit in your pantry. Ever since I went to New York, those bowls of ramen are fucking delicious. So I'm about to take a picture of it, and he says something to me like, "What are you?" Like, he's so fucking cool because he's 18. "What are you doing, Mama? Taking a picture of your food?" And I just grabbed my phone and my bowl, and I walked away, and I started crying in my room, and I shut the door. And he was like, "What's the matter? What's the matter?" And I shut my door. And in my mind, I'm like, "What? There's nothing really the matter, but my hormone." And I was like, "Why are you crying? You're a 40-year-old woman. What are you doing?"
Your fucking feelings. That's what's wrong.
Yeah, it was like, it's my period. But you can't, you don't look at an 18-year-old and go, "I'm on my period, motherfucker. Leave me alone." Like, these are just my emotions and hormones coming out where I'm like, he has no idea.
Do you have conversations with the men in your house about your cycle?
My husband is well aware.
What I do with Dion, and you know, is that I go, "Look, Harriet's starting. Brace yourself," and that's it. He knows.
Wait, warning! It's like the red light at a lab where it's like,
right. Exactly what it's like, because, and he knows this. Like 3 to 4 days before I actually, as I call, drop the bomb, I get very angry. Mm-hmm. I get angry. Like, yeah. I could punch my fist through the wall angry. And at no reason. There's mm-hmm. no reason for it. And I start dropping shit. Like, I don't know what it is, but like right before my period, I can't hold anything. And of course, dropping shit makes me even angrier.
So right. And that's, like, normally where I would have walked out and, like, talked to Ethan about what he upset me about, but because I was such, like, my hormones or emotions were so high, I didn't want to go out and talk to him about my period and be a crying mess where he'd be like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
I think what you really need to do with Ethan, because he is 18 years old, and he is going mm-hmm. to start having more adult relationships with other women, okay? You need to pull him aside and go, "Ethan, as a woman, I go through this every month. These are the side effects. So when you say something like this, while normally it's hilarious or I'll throw my shit back at you, right now, I can't. That hurts my feelings.
Right.
So to be fair to you, I will let you know when I'm going into these moods. And I hope that you respect me enough to maybe adjust your comments during that time. And have an adult conversation with him, right? Very much like you would with your husband. Mm-hmm.
And that's great advice, too, because thinking of the fact that we all poke fun at each other, where, and I'm sure he was like, man, what did I even say? You know, she can take so much. What did I do wrong this time? Is that, that's great advice, is to go back and explain to him in that moment, just not the right time, because I'm blubbering that. And I, in my mind, I'm like, I'm just stuck here and there's nothing. Normally he doesn't see all of that, right? He's out and about, but we're all living together and going through all this shit together now. There's sure no getting away from
it. You know, when Mason was here, he knew right about once a month I got tummy aches and wasn't feeling good. And it was the weirdest thing. He is like, he knew. He was like, are you okay, Tabby? Can I help you with anything? Do you need anything? You know, he just, because I wasn't feeling good, because my cramps are horrific. I mean.
Do you know when your period's coming?
Today or tomorrow.
So I still have no fucking clue. Every time it comes, it's like I'm 13 again. And I'm like,
I'm on period. So I'm on the patch. I have to stay on birth control because of my thyroid, or I'll have such irregular periods and really, really bad periods if I wasn't. I have a lot of cramping, a lot of clotting, a lot of shit that just makes you. I've described it, and someone said to me, it's pretty much, it sounds like I am having birth contractions. I mean, it puts me in bed for 2 days. I need a heating pad. I take ibuprofen every 4 hours. I mean, I'm in bed. That's it. It's done.
Did you realize that when we're in our period, our estrogen levels drop?
No. I don't understand that. I get really, really cold.
So, and I wonder if that's why it has to do with it. So the last time I went and got Botox, I went and had my injections. It didn't hurt. And then the following week, I went for a follow-up, and she touched up some places. And every time she poked me, like, I jumped. And she asked me, she said, are you on your period? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh, I can tell. And I said, well, how? And she said, it hurts you more. And I said, well, why? And she said, your estrogen levels drop when you're on your period. And estrogen is so badass.
Right.
That's what gives women a high pain tolerance.
Right.
And I was like, so it's not made up that women are stronger than men, actually. That they are babies about colds, and we take it better because our bodies are built for that, maybe for childbirth or whatever it might be. But during our periods, that drops. And so then we can feel more pain and discomfort more than ever, which, I mean, it took me 40 years to learn that.
Yeah. I mean, let me tell you what, those cramps come through and it knocks you on your ass, and it's pretty some painful shit. And I wonder, do you get more estrogen after you've had children? Like, does that increase?
I don't know that answer.
Okay. Cause I'm a big old wuss when it comes to getting a cold, and you know, I'm just like a guy.
So you're wondering if you just don't have it. You're like, maybe I just didn't have it.
Maybe low levels of estrogen.
Yeah, maybe.
That's
that might be something. Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. Well, the other thing going on. So we had, you guys know, I went on my double date.
Yes.
I just said that double date came to my house on Friday. So then, my husband's here and gets to physically and really meet my double date, right? So this is the next thing I wanted to chit-chat about. So I have happily married 16 years. Neither one of us have ever stepped out on one another. But just like any marriage, you know, you start to feel maybe the other person doesn't appreciate you. Maybe the other person isn't as attracted to you as you want them to be, or maybe you don't feel desired by your partner, or whatever it might be. And quite honestly, I feel like that sometimes about myself, that my husband doesn't desire me the way that I desire him. And then it gets in my head because I'm like, all right, I think that I'm a good looking person. I see that I'm a good looking person.
Right.
People tell me I'm a good looking person, but why don't I feel that from the one person I want it from the most?
because what you're looking for is the physical reaction and his attractiveness for you, while it still has the physicality to it, it's turned into more an emotional and providing action instead of the physicality.
Well, yeah, and I can tell you that I've learned in the last, I'd say probably the last 2 years for me, along with just stop drinking, but well, it's been 3 years now that Nate and I probably had like our worst time in our marriage was about 3 years ago, where and watching my friends be single, I've definitely learned that it's more important, or it feels better to be loved than lusted.
Yep.
And I truly believe that. But feeling wanted and desired is still important. Oh, but yeah. I know for sure I'm never going to find that from somebody else, because the way that this man loves me is unmeasurable, and I can never get satisfied any other way like that. But having said that, so here comes my double date in the house, who is this just little fella. He's like 5'6". He's a tiny little fella.
Okay.
And surprisingly, not shy to tell my husband his first impressions of me.
Oh.
And that I was, the first impression as I walked out of the house was, this girl's going to be zero fun. Because she looks zero fun. She looks intimidating, stuck up, and everything that I assume everybody thinks of me when they look at me, right?
Right.
The moment we got in the back seat of the car and Jen and I start, you know, talking back and forth, and the guys are talking, and I'm shooting shit right back at them and not offended and not missing a beat.
Right.
Was he like, oh, wow. She's actually pretty cool. And he told Nate that I was the coolest and most unique woman that he's met in the past year of his life, and that he was impressed by it and wasn't expecting it from when he first met, and how much fun he had with me at the beach and blah, 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 blah. And now my husband gets to hear all of this
from another man.
So in my mind, I'm also balancing two things of, it's important for him to hear this.
Right.
Right? Like, he needs to hear this. But also, please, Lord, don't let my husband punch this man in the fucking face. Because he's a little guy. He's a tiny little fella, and we don't need to be beating up midgets these days.
No.
But, you know, and making sure that I'm holding my husband's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And leaning towards my husband and not this way, even though, because we've been in quarantine and because I'm a talkative person and there's a new person, I want to talk to that person and find out as much crazy shit as I can, but balance the two.
Mm-hmm.
Where then afterwards, Jen and Jamie and I had a discussion where Jamie was like, I don't think Nate liked that. I don't think Nate liked how much the guy liked you.
Good.
Well, that's what I was like, that's good. And that's something that I need to see too, right? I always joke around, like, I wish Nate would get a girl that he's got a crush on so that he could find his game and his swagger back a little bit. But really, in my own eyes, I need to see a woman that knows that my husband is a fucking catch. So I know to be thankful for what I have.
Right.
And to count my blessings. And so my question I pose is, do you think that a form of jealousy like that is a good thing or bad thing in a marriage?
As long as it's something tame and small like that, right? Like a little dose, very rare kind of deal, right? Not something that is constant. I'm constantly jealous of my wife, right? Just a little reminder, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And it's good for both sides. It is.
I think it is, right? I think it is. I think there's some pride when, like, for example, when we all go out as friends, our guys all hang out together and the girls are together. And so then our husbands stand to the side. And my husband has said that they've seen other men check us out. And so they stand there and they see that.
Right.
But to actually hear somebody say these things to you about your girl?
Yeah, that's pretty That's pretty intense. Especially considering the fact you just went on an unofficial double date with the guy.
I know. And saw
a picture of his gay identical brother's twin's dick.
I'm basically cheated.
Then you saw his dick. I mean, dick physically, but you saw his brother's dick on the TV.
It's basically the replica of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a little more, I've had a situation where, you know, Dion will hear from other people good things about me from other guys, right? Mm-hmm. That he works with, oh, she's really great, we really like her, whatever, that kind of stuff. But not, like, more on what you're going through kind of deal.
Right. And then the good thing is, because I talk so much, is that after I heard it from my friends, I went and talked to my husband about it, of, hey, how did that make you feel? Right. And his feelings were the same as mine. Like, first of all, we were very surprised of how forward he was.
Right.
But also, you know, he knows that. He knows that people are thinking of those things. And sometimes it is good to hear and to know that I don't feel, because I told him what I told you in the beginning. I don't feel like he feels that way about me sometimes. And the only person I truly want attention from is my own man.
Right. And so have you talked to him about that?
Yeah. We talked all about it yesterday. So, okay. You know, that's a good thing is that you could go through something like that and then both take a step back and look and say, well, how did you feel about it? This is the way I felt about it. And make sure, first of all, that I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Because the whole time I was very aware of my husband and that I wanted to make sure that my husband didn't feel disrespected.
Right.
Because if not, I know he will punch somebody in the face. Nate might be the quietest, laid back man, but he's a fucking hockey player.
Right.
And will quickly snap if he feels like he's being disrespected. And I'm aware of that. Whether or not anybody else is, I'm very aware of that at all times.
Right.
And
as you should be.
Right. So I think it was a weird thing to go through, but it was also, it was good because it resulted in conversations.
Yeah.
Right? Conversations that maybe we wouldn't have had without saying, well, what if this ever happened? Well, it actually happened. So let's talk about it.
Right. Let's see what we talked about it, figure it out. And, you know, and I think you and him are now going to have an open communication about making sure that each of you feel the certain things you need to feel. Right?
Yeah.
Appreciated, attracted to, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because everybody shows their love differently.
Yeah, going back to those love languages, right? Like, yeah.
Do you show it by just saying things, doing things, your physical actions, you know, and how that works and what you guys need.
Right. And I think, you know, what's important too for people to understand is I'm in no way insecure about the way I look, right? Like I'm not insecure. My insecurity comes from my husband's side. Is I want to please him. I dress the way I do not for other men, but for myself and for my man. I want him to be proud of me.
Okay.
And if he's not saying that, I don't care if Joe Blow at a bar thinks that I'm pretty.
Right.
What I care about is that my man is like, that's my wife.
Right.
That blonde over there, that's my girl.
Yeah, and maybe he needs to say, well, you know, a few more romantic things or walking by, like every day, look at you go, damn, you look good, baby.
Right, like, yeah, just something,
just
yeah.
Just small little things like that. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, that's what Dion does.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, like, you know, but we had the conversation, what we need. I was like, I need the verbal confirmation. And I said, and then the action. You know, so
and that
works.
And you know what's funny is, so you know, you and I, which I wasn't even going to share this, but we I told you and I were texting and prepping for our podcast today, and I was like, all right, I gotta go, I gotta jump in the shower, I'm gonna have sex, and then I'll work on our outline. And then you asked me how sex was, and I was like, oh, it was just sex. But the best part about it was we had sex in the shower, and then we were done, I was hugging Nate, and I always smell his neck, which is so weird, but his, like, that was the best part of us having sex this morning, was when I smelled his neck. He smells like security and comfort and home to me, where I was like, this is good. That little stranger saying all this stuff, that doesn't matter. That spot on my neck, that's my safety spot.
Right.
So that part was great. The rest of it was just sex.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Well, see, we snuggle after sex every time.
Oh, you do? See, most of the time I don't.
No, so we have sex, we clean up, and then we're like snuggle time.
Oh, nice.
15, you know, 5, 10 minutes, whatever, but just a little bit of snuggles, and then we go on about our business.
That's a good idea to kind of implement in our lives, is even as Corona slowed things down and now I'm worried about it speeding things up, is remembering to slow it back down. And maybe I should take 10, 15 minutes of Nate's time and say, hey, why don't we just lay in bed and hold each other? Because I'm not that kind of person.
Right.
And we both sleep on opposite sides. But maybe just that connection of intimacy without
the sex.
Yeah, is... would be so impactful for us.
Right. We do it a lot because our dogs are demanding of snuggles. So yeah. Dion's like, oh, they need snuggles. And they all get jumping in the bed. And he's like, mommy, mommy, we need snuggles. So then me, him, and the dogs snuggle. And we do that maybe twice a day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens. It's 5-10 minutes. We're snuggling. We're loving. Not necessarily a lot of conversation is going on, but there's just that reminder that we're here together. This is a family and it's a unit and we're all here.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I think I'm going to implement that. I'm going to write that down. Snuggle time.
There you go. Put it on your calendar.
15 minutes. I'm going to do that today. Let's jump over to talking about, like, you know, solidarity and all this being... Well, no, there's no, I lost the transition.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this 20-year-old that walked into the woods and walked away from his life. Okay. You sent me the article, so tell me about it.
So I found this article and then I started reading it and I was going, okay, this is going to be so good. I'm going to be moved. I'm going to find some profoundness in it. And I felt so disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this really, really long article, this 20-year-old.
Well, tell them first where the article came from. I got it. The Guardian.
Okay.
And the article's titled, like, 20-year-old walks away.
It goes, Into the Woods, How One Man Survived Alone in the Wilderness for 27 Years.
There you go. All right, go ahead.
So Christopher Knight at 20, he abruptly quit his job. He never came back. He used to install security systems in Boston, Massachusetts. And he, for no reason, he had no friends, no connection to his coworkers. So he cashed his last paycheck and he started driving. Started driving down south, made it all the way to Florida. And said, well, then he decided, he turned around, came back up, ended up in Maine. And then he decided to just disappear. He got very few supplies and basically drove his car into the wilderness until the gas ran out.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty ballsy. So I'm like, all right, this is sounding good. And then he wanted to get lost. He wanted to become a hermit. And he didn't know, but he had no reason. Like, he didn't know why he wanted to leave.
He said, to the rest of the world, I cease to exist. So he didn't matter. So he just felt like he just wanted to walk away.
Right. And which I thought was interesting, because where was his family? Like, his family was worried about him for 27 years because he just up and left.
Yeah. It didn't say if his family searched for him or anything like that, because he did have a family, not a wife and kids. He was a single 20-year-old, but he had a mother.
Right.
You know, that was worried. Yeah.
So, and then we learned that hermits are a normal thing in our, you know, happen throughout history. And then there's normally three reasons why people leave civilization. One, because of religious awakenings and very much like Jesus and Buddha, et cetera, right? Then the other one is hatred of what the world has become. Too much war, poverty, sickness, you know. You can't stand what it's turning into, so you turn your back on it. And then wishing to be alone for artistic reasons. And I understand those reasons, but he didn't have any of those. He just, decided I'm going to leave. It's kind of weird.
I had the same feeling that you did reading the article of, I'm excited to find out about his spiritual journey and what that must have been like walking away. And like when he said to the rest of the world, I cease to exist, I was like, oh man, what a terrible feeling to feel like he is a man going to work every day, but that he's invisible coming into my house to secure, you know, put in a camera. You don't even notice these people, right? You're not asking how their days are. You're not investing in them. And so when he said that, I was like, this is going to be a great article.
Right. And then, you know, him, like you said, ceasing to exist. But I wonder how much he made himself relevant. How much was he talking to people? How much was he trying to reach out? Right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really talk about that. And he was the longest enduring solitaries in history.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought he lived 27 years by himself,
which is crazy. But let's be really honest. This guy was unprepared. He had no food, right? Okay. And he's all like, I'm going to survive on my own, but I don't have any food. So apparently not very bright.
Right.
So then he begins stealing from gardens around the different lakes in Maine, and which, from what I'm gathering, it sounds like it's a more vacation location, vacation area. So people have these houses out on the lake and they're not there full time. So he starts stealing and he's living in the woods around these lakes. But is that really away from society? That sounds more like he's using society and not giving back. And he's a little creeper in the woods.
Yeah, that's true. I like the part where you said he's not giving back. He's taking from society because he did eventually, he said that he wasn't going to beg or take handouts and that he still wanted to have his morals. But then eventually he started stealing from these cabins.
Right.
Which then you're right. He is taking from society but not contributing anything back to it.
So it sounds like to me he's very selfish. And then he wrote in his thing, every time I was conscious that I was doing wrong, I took no pleasure in doing it. So then my response was, well, why didn't you learn how to hunt? You were out there for 27 years. You could have learned how to make traps, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, I was like, why didn't you take seeds from the gardens you were stealing from and fucking plant your own?
Right.
So I don't have any sympathy for him. I feel like he was just a user.
Yeah, I felt, like I said, I thought I was going to learn about somebody's huge spiritual journey. And there's a few quotes in there where it says, not to seek themselves, but to lose themselves, which I thought was pretty cool. Where it's because it says, what did it say? It's to acquire wisdom. It's only through retreat rather than pursuit that are you able to acquire wisdom. And I was like, wow, that's crazy to think that you shouldn't just be pushing and pushing, but maybe if you just put your hands up for a second, maybe some enlightenment and release will happen instead of just fighting and always having your fist clutched. And the idea of losing themselves, the fact that you can just walk in the woods and I wouldn't be Sabrina. I wouldn't have a name. You get to completely shed yourself of whoever you were at 20 years old. I was like, you know, that must have felt amazing too. A little scary because if you're not a wife or a mother or a working woman, then what are you? And he was forced to figure out what he was.
Right. With no social stigma attached to it, because if you're in the woods, you don't have to fit into any of those roles.
Right.
But I would take that as if he was in the woods with no human contact. He was still sitting there watching families, right? He was right. watching them, seeing where they were going. He was seeing fathers and mothers and children and cousins and all interacting. Was he really in solitude?
Yeah, yeah. I at the end of it, I said he ended up right. getting arrested for burglary and theft. I wrote, he's not a deep thinker. He's not Gandhi. He's just a simple man, and a simple man with very low ambitions and drive. And there was a sadness to the end right. of the article where I was yep. like, this is it. You spent 27 years of your life in the woods, and all you are is a yep. thief now.
Nothing spiritual, nothing. He didn't grow. He didn't. He wasted right. 27 years of his life. Not because he was in the woods, but because he didn't do anything with the time that he was in the woods. He didn't learn anything from it. He just was a hobo stealing from people's shit.
Right, right. If you connect that to what we're all doing right now, right? We've all been in the woods for 90 yeah. days. Have you learned yeah. from it? And if you have, what? And it doesn't matter how small or how big, but if you've gone these last 90 days and you are the same person coming out of the woods that you are in or going in, you wasted yep, this time.
Sure did. Because I really believe that this time was a blessing, right? So, especially mm-hmm. for me. So, it has really jump started our self-sufficiency, right? Mm-hmm. I'm actually very looking forward to canning more foods, getting it prepared, you know, making our lives different, but healthier, simpler. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that because eventually it will be the retirement income stream, right? And then it also opened our eyes, you know, financially. I had to restructure the way that we do our finances because of this. And right. it was a huge eye opener. I went, okay, I learned my lesson. God is like smacking me upside the head going, dumbass. And I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm listening. So I had to go and we made right. changes.
Mm-hmm. I would challenge our listeners and to really step back and think who you were before we went into the woods and who you want to be right. when we come out, and be honest with yourself if any of these feelings we're having, like, will your farm die? All this work you've done in 6 months, if I'm looking at dry, dead plants, mm-hmm. did you truly learn anything while you were in the woods? Right. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with me. Like I'm not sure exactly what I've learned. And I think that I need to spend a little more time drilling down on, because I have a ton of feelings mm-hmm. and emotions lately. I completely fucking broke down last week on my dad's birthday. And not just about my father, but about the loss of this life that I used right. to have. Right. And about the way I was feeling about my husband, and that came out of nowhere, and a sadness over a friend that I hadn't thought about in a long time, that, you know, just all this stuff of, well, you better make sure that you use this time and heal and come out of the woods a better right. version of yourself. Have learned something and take yes. it with you.
It doesn't have to.
If not, you're just a thief in the woods. You stole that time from everybody. You yep. stole whatever. You
wasted it.
Yeah.
Don't be wasteful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the article was funny. It's a funny emotional ride. You guys should read it because I think you expect a lot from this guy. And the guy is
interviewed. Yeah, it is a relatively long article. And at one point I'm going, yeah. okay, let's get to the point here. Like, let's get to right. something good, and good never comes.
No, no. Now, what did you think of the article that I sent you on Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
It was from the LA Times article about Norma.
Yes. So I had seen it before, and I don't know what the hell LA Times problem is, but when I went to go click on it on Twitter, it was like, you can't read the whole article unless you subscribe. And I've had a couple articles that do that. Like, why are you guys doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some newspaper outlets that are trying to get you to pay for a subscription or something. But the article said that Norma Covey was Jane Roe in the, obviously, Roe versus Wade that legalized abortion in the United States. That in 1995, she actually came and she joined a group that was against abortion. So in 1995, it was a big deal that the plaintiff in Roe versus Wade, who fought for our rights for abortion, was now against them. And the documentary that's coming out, that's called, also known as Jane Roe on FX, talks about the fact that she was paid to state that she was against abortions.
Exactly. And it's pretty crazy. So what it also does is it talks about, where was it? She was selected as the plaintiff for Roe versus Wade because she was uneducated, she didn't have a lot of money, and she had no means to travel out of state to get an abortion or obtain an illegal abortion. So my perspective of that is that the movement chose a person off an affidavit in 1970 that was challenging the laws in Texas, and because of her circumstances, they selected her to be that. So she wasn't the head figure of this case or this cause, which I thought was pretty crazy, because I would have thought you would have wanted someone who was passionate about the topic. Right?
I think that they purposely selected somebody that, because she said that she was pregnant and didn't want the baby. It was an accidental pregnancy, and she said it was a mistake. And she wasn't somebody that's fighting on the steps, because by the time that the case happened, she had already delivered the baby and put the baby up for adoption. Because, of course, abortions still weren't legal until then. So it was a moot point by the time the results of Roe versus Wade came out. When she said everybody looked at her and, aren't you so happy? Well, what the fuck do I care about? I gave the kid away a long time ago. Like, why?
That was her third child. Her second child was adopted out. And then her first child was being raised by her mother.
Her mother, yeah. So What angered me about the article is the fact that in 1995, she took money to speak against abortion. Because what that does, it takes the pro-life people and it gives them the stance of, see, even she has agreed this is morally unright and we should not be doing this. Your spokesperson is saying herself that this is a bad decision. And that was extremely selfish of her and irresponsible for her. And it reminds me of these influencers that we see on television, whether they be celebrities or bloggers or this or a news anchor or your friends, that take these positions where we should remember that people have their own motive behind that position. Hers was financial. And it affects a lot of people's opinions of what she did. Her statement threw a huge fucking curveball. And so you need to be very careful who you connect your, what's that saying? Like, who you hitch your horse to or whatever. Like, know what their motives are. When you jump onto somebody's bandwagon, are you fighting the same fight with them for the same right. reason?
Or were you just signing that petition because you wanted to abort the baby and you had no, you didn't care about right. it? Because she said, you know, she took their money and said what they wanted. She did it well. She said she was a hell of an actress, so that's why she was really good at it. But then on her deathbed, she confessed and said that if a young woman wants to have an abortion, that's no skin off my ass. That's why they call it a choice. That does not strike me as someone who genuinely cares about the cause. On either side.
I agree.
She sounds like a fucking user. She also was with a longtime girlfriend, and in 1995, when she started taking the money, their relationship dissolved. So right. her girlfriend was going, you're a sellout.
Right. Yeah. I made me the article, and it'd be interesting to see the documentary too. I'm not even sure if I want to watch it because I feel like such a big moment that allowed freedom for women to be able to choose what they want to do with their body is tainted now because this woman is so selfish. And that's
on both sides, if you think about it.
On because both sides.
Even the anti-abortion people were like, they paid her as a contingency plan because they thought she was going to back out and go to the other side because they knew damn well they were playing her as well.
Right. And this is what I would push people to think. Before you support a cause and believe anybody's story, like even if Tabby was like, well, I support this and I'm going to vote for this, there could be financial reasons behind that of, you know, well, if this law goes in, it's going to be more beneficial for, you know who talks about this a lot? Okay. Charlemagne the God. Charlemagne talks a lot about voting for your right. benefit. And that you vote for what's good for you and your people. And in his case, it's the Black community. He is going to vote, whether it's Republican or Democrat, of whoever will make him the yes. best offer. And he's going to go and say that to somebody. You tell me what you're going to do for me, and you'll get my vote. And people need to remember that. When you look at a spokesperson saying, I support so-and-so, that there are personal reasons behind that. And you better damn be sure that your personal reasons are aligned with them. If not, you could be following somebody who got paid just to speak along. Right,
and unfortunately, a lot of people can't see that. And then these spokespeople are only saying the key words, very much like right. this other article, Into the Woods. It's the key words mm-hmm. just to get people on board because they don't actually research and do any of the, you know, searching. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I'm supporting you. But they don't know what the hell is going on because they didn't read the whole article. You know, and I right. hate that. And then.
Right.
And then the other thing that I had a problem with her is that she became friends with Flip Benhan, who was an evangelical minister. She got baptized. And then she published a memoir in 98. Called Won by Love, detailing her change on abortion. But at the same time, this is where I'm losing my shit. She also took a place in demonstrations where there was the burning of the LGBT flag and the Quran. She did.
She did?
No, she didn't actually.
But she had a girlfriend.
Her girlfriend was gone at that point. So how are you a lesbian for all those years, and 3 years later, you're burning the or you're at a demonstration where they are burning the LGBT flag.
She's a
dirty snitch.
Yes, she's a flip flopper, right? I mean, she is paid for her opinion, and I think you're right when you said that she was a user. Like, I feel like she is just a user
both
of
sides.
A situation. She's someone that...
she doesn't care.
No, she doesn't care, which is so sad because it's such a huge moment right. for women.
The thing that just blows my mind is of all the people on that list, they chose her. I mean, I'm sure, you know, they didn't know.
No.
But it's just...
Not at
all.
It's
crazy. Yeah. And it's very disheartening. And she also lied, because when she went public in 1980 and began giving interviews, she claimed she got pregnant by rape and then said she was lying. So you can't believe anything that comes out of her mouth.
Right. See, on that part, I kind of understood, right? Because we've already said that she had three kids, all of which, once being, you know, raised by a grandparent, the other two by adoption. So instead of her in 1980 wanting to say, like, yeah, I keep having unprotected sex and I keep having unwanted pregnancies, the easiest thing to say was, I was raped, which, shame on you. You either stand by the decisions you're making and say, I had unprotected sex and it resulted in an unwanted pregnancy and it's my right to terminate this pregnancy, rather than, again, hop on a fucking bandwagon and be the martyr for women of rape and the right for abortion, when that's not the fucking case.
I agree. And she should have just remained anonymous.
Absolutely.
Then we would have never known.
She's a bad person, and staying anonymous wouldn't have gotten her her money. And that's what she did, right? She was for sale.
She was, and that was what she did. So, yeah.
Now, what did you think? I sent you an article about the Kentucky cheerleaders.
So, I read it, and...
Hold on, let me state my source before I jump. Oh, there's the word kumquat. So it was on TMZ. University of Kentucky fires cheerleading coaches for wild hazing nudity allegations. That I guess they had gone on a trip and the team members engaged in nude routines, including topless and bottom and basket tosses in the water from the dock. They were carried out while under the supervision of team coaches. Team members slammed alcohol during boat parties. Several members required medical treatment. And they were all fired. One, two, three, four coaches fired after a three-month investigation. What do you think about it?
Absolutely. But at the same time, I'm also going to take it a step further. They should do what they're doing to Greek fraternities that are getting in trouble for hazing. They should shut the organization down. They shut chapters down for it. The hell with all the other guys that are in there as well. I don't like the fact that college sports kind of get away with stuff because they're bringing in revenue. The coaches got fired, but... What about the other people that are participating?
The cheerleaders themselves.
Participating themselves. They knew they had rules. They knew they had regulations that they weren't supposed to be doing. I highly doubt they were being forced to do it. So, I mean, they should shut down the cheerleading squad.
Right. And when you rushed, did you rush?
Yeah, well, it's called recruitment. Rush. It's another word for it.
Okay. Was there an hazing or is there another name for hazing? Hazing sounds so terrible.
Hazing. Yes.
Yeah. Was there any form of hazing, whether it be a milder version of it, just because of tradition?
So the college campus that I was on was very strict. Okay, so when you're a new recruit or a pledge, when you go through Rush, I was not allowed to drink. I was not allowed to go to bars. I was not allowed, not even part of the Greek organization yet. I wasn't allowed to do certain things, right, during this two-week period. If you were a Greek fraternity member and you got caught drinking, you could get in trouble. If you got caught buying a pledge, so say it was after hours, the girls go home, the pledges go home, you guys happen to go out to dinner and you see the girl, you're not supposed to interact with her. You're not allowed to go up and say, hey, it was so great meeting you the other day. I had an awesome time. Oh, let me get your sandwich. If you buy that girl a sandwich who's a pledge, that's considered hazing, even though it's positive. Because you're influencing her decision. So that's how strict I had it. Now, the guys, the way they do it is a lot different. It's way more relaxed. So I've heard hazing stories, right? I've never seen them or really experienced them. But for us, there were no hazing. It was a no hazing policy. If you pledged a certain chapter, or so like me, I pledged Theta, and you have a pledge initiation time, right? So you're a pledge for like 3 or 4 months, right? Learning, but you don't get to know the traditions and the rituals until you become initiated. So before you get invited into, if a sister does something, even buys you a freaking lunch, that's considered hazing. Or if you take her to a bar, if you're caught at a bar with the pledge, you can be considered hazed.
So we had, I didn't go to college, so I didn't pledge a sorority or anything like that. But my only experience with an initiation and hazing was when I was in high school and I was a freshman, and it was part of our marching band's tradition was, excuse me, my freshman year going into high school. So I haven't even had a day one of class, but during the summer, the marching band meets, and there is band camp, which is an actual camp, but it is, you know, a schedule Monday through Friday, basically a 40-hour week of you guys learning your routine and the music for the upcoming year, because football season starts immediately, and so does your own competition season. The tradition at the time, and this is 1994, I think, of my school, was at the end of that five days, there was initiation for the freshmen or all new members. And that included us changing our clothes into dirty clothes. And then we were to march around with the upperclassmen walking around and telling us the commands to do. And then they marched us into the dirt parking lot next to our school. And they put us in a line. And these fuckers had been having food sit out or whatever item they were now going to use to initiate us. And it was, you stood at attention. You did not talk. I mean, you stood at full attention, which is hands to the side, looking straight ahead, and you closed your mouth, because a line of about 100 kids are about to walk down. And it started with the seniors, juniors, and then sophomores to pour shit on your head. And some of it smelled terrible. Like, James, I remember the shit you poured on my head, and you and Ted laughing about how you guys had let it sit forever. And this girl Tristan was on one side, and I still have pictures of it. And we're standing at attention, and our eyes are closed and our mouths are shut, but it was fun. And when it was all done, they made us line up and march around again. But once it was done, we were members of this band. And if you didn't want to do it, you didn't have to do it. We all went home and showered. I had long curlies. I had a spiral perm at the time. I had a hamster. One of those fuckers brought hamster, the wood chips. Genius. Because it's hard to get it out of your hair. And so I had hamster pieces all throughout my hair. You smelled like rotten eggs and rotten milk and whatever else. And then we all went to this huge community pool party. And it was the tradition of it and what was expected. It just, you didn't feel terrible. Nobody was saying terrible things to you. It was part of the tradition. So there's part of me that's like, okay, well, tradition is tradition. And for girls, say if I'm just going to imagine cheerleaders and these, I don't know if the coaches were boys or girls, but say if they were all girls, or even gay men, right? And they're doing routines topless and naked. That might be what drunk college girls do. But if they're being forced
to do it,
to do things drunk and naked, then there's an issue to it. But if it's just girls doing, you know, sometimes girls kiss each other all the time. They show their titties all the time. I'm not a cheerleader, but I can imagine they'd be like, let's do topless stunts together, girls. Or if it was something that they all wanted to do, then I don't see the problem with it being forced to do it.
Unless it goes against their guidelines and their policies. I mean, they've got rules and regulations. It's not high school anymore.
Right.
We never had any initiation like what you're talking about. So so I just want to clarify, because you said initiation or hazing, right? What you experienced would be considered initiation. Our initiation was more of a formal setting, right? There was nothing bad that happened, right? And I can't, without going into too much detail, because it's where you go through our ritual. And our ritual is different than hazing. Does that make sense? And there are communities that go out and they encourage their members to drink.
Right, dangerous. Exactly, dangerous.
There
fucking
are
dangerous,
situations
right.
like that. Then there are situations where it's a guy who made the decision on his own to drink too much and ended up in the hospital, and the whole organization is under attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fine line, and Greek fraternities in general all over the nation are being attacked because
I think because of the alcohol, really.
So
don't you think?
I think, no, that's what they want to make it sound like. But if you ever heard the stories of the football hazing and the shit that's going on in the dorm rooms, the drinking, the alcohol poisoning, the drugs that are going on in there, and the schools aren't doing anything to clean it up, pisses me off. Mm-hmm. Stop targeting organizations that promote philanthropy, community service, grade point averages. I mean, so yeah, they drink as much as the rest of the kids, but they're also doing all this other stuff. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You're going to punish these kids for excessively drinking. Well, then you better fucking open your eyes and look at your football team and your every other sport, your baseball team, your volleyball teams, everywhere else that's bringing in money, look at what's going on in the dorm rooms and start punishing everybody.
Right.
But not because you don't like Greek fraternities, because they're a single-sex organization.
Now, do universities, I'm going to assume yes, because this was the cheerleading team, have a universal no hazing, no initiation policy, and it's universal. It's not specifically towards Greek.
Correct. It's depending on the university itself. Yes, they should have a no hazing policy.
Right. Because I think that the problem that I have with it, no matter what, I don't care if you're on a football team, if you're playing bocce ball, or in a Greek fraternity, I think is the amount of alcohol that becomes dangerous of, you know, like they're saying, drink. Or if anybody's watched Lifetime, there's these, you know, true stories of sororities back in the day where they would make these girls drink. They would make them take off their clothes. They'd stand on the table. They would point out all these things that are terribly fucking wrong with them that then are causing body shaming and all. Like, that stuff isn't necessary. The thing that I went through was fun. Where some people might look at it now, like if we just showed a picture, they'd be like, oh my God, look at those poor children. My parents had no fucking problem with it. My parents paid to develop the film that was on it, right? I mean, parents, there were some band parents there laughing because we had all gone through it.
And it was fun, and there was no physical harm to what was going on.
Right.
But when you get to college and these girls going topless and bottomless, there's a sexual stigma to that, right?
Right, yeah.
We're not talking about throwing some dirty food on you. We're talking about sex. We're talking mm-hmm. about alcohol, poisoning, shit that's going to kill you.
Right.
And fuck you up for the rest of your lives. So I know hazing policy, and I completely agree with it. But if you're going to freaking isolate certain people out for certain things, you better open your fucking eyes because and ignore the paycheck because your football team's doing that shit, if not worse. And they're...
Well, it's even beyond colleges where I've been... I was a military wife, and I know that as... When my ex-husband became an E6 or whatever first class was, and they put the patch on him, everybody went by and hit him. Like, there is a tradition of some sort associated with a ton of clubs right. or memberships or jobs that... and now in the military, right. you can get in trouble for it. Because it is considered hazing. And there, and I guess the problem is with hazing is where I was in a controlled environment where it was parents making the decision. When you go to college, it's students with a lack of maturity and responsibility making those decisions. And I agree. And same thing with the military, let's be honest. When you are 20, 21 years old doing these things, and I watched my ex-husband just and friend just pour fucking liquor down this guy's mouth into a yep. beer bong over drink. And the fucker drove away and wrecked his fucking car. And those right. guys should be responsible for that. You know, they endangered him. So I agree that it has to be kind of a black and white, like we can't allow it no matter right. what, because it's you can't trust dangerous. Anybody. It's dangerous.
And I don't want, you know, organizations that tend to bring in more money get away with it because they don't, the university doesn't want to lose their pretty paycheck.
Right, right. Well, I can tell that it's, and I'm sure everybody else can tell too, that it's very personal to you because you fraternity. Belong to a sorority and you seem very mad at the football fraternity and very mad at football teams for getting away right. with
don't
whatever they're getting away with.
My organizations. When you're doing the exact same thing on the other mm-hmm. side but turning a blind eye, don't portray these Greek right. organizations all over the news that they're so fucking horrible and these are really bad kids and white privileged and they're horrible and fucking up and all this stuff. When you're doing the exact same thing on the football field, you know? So,
right. I don't yeah. see... Well, I think that the University yeah. of Kentucky set a great example, right? I mean, football players and cheerleaders go hand in hand and come with some of the same power. So I think that
yes,
they
I'm
did
glad that they
good
stood
for
up
them.
And did what was necessary.
And sometimes when, you know, we talked about the students, but when the coaches and leadership is there,
right.
that's where the burden falls. If your leadership is there, your leadership takes responsibility.
Right.
And that's where the buck fucking stops. If leadership wasn't there, then to me it would be the senior cheerleaders. Those people then get kicked out of the school.
It's
but because the coaches were there,
it should be on the coaches
because
it was their
yeah.
responsibility to take care of those kids. Yeah,
absolutely,
I agree.
Yeah. Well, cool. I think that's all I have to talk about today.
We covered
you got anything
it all,
else?
And I was shocked. Because I had like 4 pages of notes. Oh,
nice.
Good.
Anything exciting that you're looking forward to between now and our next recording? It's Memorial Day weekend.
I
Any
mean,
fun
we're
plans?
Still working on aquaponics, and we got this stuff in the aquaponics, and now we're working on water levels with the nitrites and the nitrates and all of that sort of fun stuff, and then. But after that, no, we're just laying low. I had told Dion about our friend's birthday and that next weekend. And he was like, yep, we're going. I'm seeing uh-huh. he jumped out of his seat. He's so excited. He's like, I got to get out of here. And I'm like, okay, calm down there. It's okay. Relax.
I will share that on Saturday, I went to the beach with Jamie and Jen, and my in-laws from Georgia were there. and we sat further away from them. But at one point, because I don't know they're you know, what rules they're following and what rules they're not, right? So you don't just want to run up to somebody. But when I sat myself further away, they said, get your ass over here. And I went over there and I hugged my niece, and we hugged for a really long time. And both of us text each other later and said that we didn't want to let go. It just feels good to hug a friend, right? Like, hug your family.
Right. Have some human connection.
Yeah. And I'm not a fucking hugger. And it got to me. Even now, like, I'm about to tear. I can't wait to see you next weekend. I can't wait to get a big bear hug from Dion. Tell Dion he can hug me.
Okay.
Big bear hug. And don't be in a rush to let go anymore. Like, let's just...
Okay.
Let's be these weird people and just hold on to each other forever.
We're just going to hug it out, girl. We're just going to hug it all out.
Yeah, just wait till we record next week. And I'm like, fuck you guys. Don't touch me anymore.
I know. 2 days after the quarantine's over, Sabrina's like, don't touch me. Correct. I don't want you near me.
So, all right. Say our goodbyes.
All right, guys. As always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Bye, guys.
Bye.